We finished the class on Sunday summarizing the speeches of Jehovah and the things that God said to Job. God's words were they harsh? You think? Were they unfair? The friends had been unfair, but they had been harsh too. But was Jehovah harsh in some spots to Job? I think he's a little harsh with him. But it's what Job needed to hear. God said to him what he needed to hear to put things in perspective. Tried to get Job to see the place that he played in this grand scheme of things. Job did not know all that he thought he knew. And the reason God had to deal with him the way that he did is because Job had been unfair with God. Job had said things that he shouldn't have said. And so God had to sort of set the record straight, if you will. So he put Job in a quandary, if you will. He just peppered him with all these statements and questions. And Job didn't have an answer for it. He was left speechless. So he convinced Job of his great power, manifested through all the examples that he used in his speeches on creation. Both of the inanimate creation, heavens, the constellations, all that that exists. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth, Job? Answer me if you can. So he talked about that. Then, of course, he used all the animate creation. Explain to me how all these intricate details of all the different species, how they work. Explain to me why this particular animal looks this way and functions this way, and explain this one, explain this one, explain this one. And Job couldn't answer any of it. So it was to get Job's attention that he just should not question. And that was the point that I think needs to be made, and we try to make that at the end of class. The reason God went through all of that that litany, that great long list of things that he made, was to get Job to see that behind all this majestic, created stuff is a divine, omniscient being who absolutely has his thumb on the pulse of it at all times. He's completely aware of what's going on, manages it, not only created it, but manages it, superintends it with flawless effort. Just no mistakes. It's just perfect. And the point is, if you can't explain any of that, which Job could not, then, Job, who are you to question me in this situation that you find yourself in? Which Job had done that. And I think that's the point that God wanted Job to see. God controls all worlds, all facets of creation, inanimate, animate, and certainly the human realm, where Job, of course, found himself. Okay. Now we get to chapter 42, and you see that Job then has some things to say back to Jehovah. And we see a different Job now. I think we see a broken Job or a humbled Job. Yes, sir, Bobby? Go ahead. Absolutely. Bobby reminds us that New Testament passage, that the Old Testament written for our learning, and it certainly is. But these words were said to benefit Job too. So it's to him primarily, but recorded for us, who, as he said, many generations later have studied it, and we've come hopefully to the conclusion God wants us to come to, that we must trust Him. We can't question Him. If we find ourselves in some situation, I doubt to his degree, but we may find ourselves in some adverse times, and we're going to have to deal with that like God wants us to. Okay, so Job begins to reply. He's broken. He's humbled. He admits, look in verse 2, that God cannot be thwarted. can't thwart this divine being. Verse 2, I know that thou canst do all things, and that no purpose of thine can be thwarted. This may be the first time that Job is willing to admit that there might be some purpose behind what's happened to him. And he's not even entertained that thought at all in the past. As far as he was concerned, whenever he talked about or thought about his condition, to him it was just unfair. There wasn't any purpose to it. I'm being dealt with unfairly by Jehovah. I haven't done anything wrong. I don't deserve this. But now he says, there's no purpose of thee or thine that can be thwarted. So he's willing to admit now that God knows more of what's going on than he does. And I'm going to have to accept that and try to find the best of that. Verse 3. Look in verse 3. Job also confesses that behind all of God's actions there is divine design and principal purpose. Like that's just what we commented on right there. So he seems to be at least admitting that. Now verse 3. He quotes God. Look at verse 3 of chapter 42 and compare it to chapter 38 when Jehovah started to speak, and verse 2. Chapter 42, verse 3. The first phrase in verse 3 with the first phrase in chapter 38, verse 2. You see a similarity? He quotes Jehovah. And in chapter 38, verse 2, who was it that Jehovah was referring to? Would have been Job. By Job quoting him here, what's Job agreeing to? Yeah, that was me. I did that, and I shouldn't have done it. But he admits to that now when he says, who is it that hides counsel without knowledge? So that's the end of the quotation. Then in the last part of verse 3, Job admits, he confesses what? What's he say? I have declared that which I did not understand. I said it, and I shouldn't have said it. I didn't know what I thought I knew. Things too wonderful for me to know. And that's something that we're going to have to keep in mind, isn't it, brethren? That there's just things that are out there, up there, around us. There's things that God certainly has knowledge of that are at work. These things are at play. And we don't have the foggiest idea about some things going on. There are some things that we probably can see and understand that are at work in situations that we can see present in our lives. But we can't know every detail. We just can't. Have you ever thought about a lot of things pertaining to what God knows that we don't know? Take, like, for example, the future. God hides the future from you. You think that's a blessing? Or are we being deprived of it? No, it's a blessing. If we knew the future, it would crush us. It'd be too much. We can't handle that. There's just too much there for us to be able to hold up under the weight of that. But God handles it. He can. He's our Father. And so Job says, there's just too many things out there that's just too wonderful for me to even contemplate, let alone imagine and try to understand. So he makes this admission. He makes this confession now in verse 3. I don't see Job being compelled to say this. He offers this willingly. That's why I say it's a broken Job. It's a humble Job. He's come full circle in this thing now. Absolutely has. All right. Verse 4. He quotes God again. So he quotes God two times in this final response. Quotes him in verse 3, who is this that hides counsel but without knowledge? And then verse 4. Again, he said back in chapter 38, Jehovah speaking, and verse 3, after he said to gird up your loins like a man, I will ask you and you instruct me. So Job quotes him in verse 4, hear now and I will speak. I will ask thee and do thou instruct me. Job again makes the confession that he was never in any position to instruct God. Never was once in that position. No man's ever in that position. But that's precisely where Job had put himself when Jehovah started to speak to him, because of the ways he had questioned Jehovah in God's management of the universe, particularly Job's complaints about managing the moral world in which Job thought he had been treated unfairly. And so God said, well, then I'll be quiet and you teach me. But Job now again says, hear now, and I will speak. I will ask thee, and do thou instruct me. Job finally acknowledges something. I think Job acknowledges the good that has resulted from his situation that he formally had said earlier in the book. What did he say about his life on several occasions? Particularly in chapter 3, in his opening lament. What did he lament? Wish I'd never been born. Life not even worth living. That's how he saw his life back then. Now he's willing to confess and acknowledge that good can come from this. Good can come from it. If I have faith and I trust and I wait on the Lord and I let Him work things out, things that I don't know, I can't see, I can't fathom them all, I can't figure them out, but I'm going to trust Him. Good can come from that. Romans 8:28, what's it say? All things work together for good to them that love the Lord and are called according to His purpose. That certainly would apply to things we've been talking about in the book of Job, and particularly at this point in chapter 42. So he makes this acknowledgement that good has come. Well, we come to verse 5, and I pointed this out when we went through the introduction of the book so many weeks ago. But I want you to look again at verse 5. To me, when you study Job and you go through the text, as we have done, whether you go through it in chunks like we have because of constraints of time, or if you're not studying it on a formal system like this, but going through it verse by verse, line by line, it'll take a lot longer, but if you do that, to me, the light at the end of the tunnel is 42 and verse 5. That's the theme. To me, it is the most beautiful statement in the whole book. And it really is the climax. It's the pinnacle. When Job says, I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear. But what? But now, mine eye seeth thee. I thought I knew before. It's a figure of speech. Not literally. I have heard of thee by the hearing. I thought I understood. But now, I really understand. Now mine eye seeth thee. Now, of course, you can't see God. That's not literal. But Job has understanding now, and we need to make sure we get this, because this is critical to a proper understanding of the book. Job, when he says, now mine eye seeth thee, he would not have this understanding without what? What's he gone through? With this whole ordeal of suffering. He wouldn't have it. He wouldn't know what he knows now if he had not gone through this ordeal, this suffering. Well, yes, they did. Of course, they didn't. They didn't. No, they didn't. You're right, Bobby. They didn't do him good. They didn't do him justice. And the reason I'm stressing this, and I think I made this point when we started the quarter, when we took our time to introduce the book, and we did jump way ahead and introduce 42 and verse 5 as the theme. I have talked to Christians. I even had one brother. We didn't argue, but he took issue with me when I either preached a sermon or I wrote a bulletin article that I was editing one time, a paper. And I made the point that, you know, we need to be able to get to the point where we are mature enough in our faith that we can see the good in suffering. Now, I'm not saying go out there and look for it. I mean, it's going to find you. You don't have to go look for it. But it's going to come our way. But I've seen enough Christians, just in my limited time in the kingdom, that they'll jump through all types of hoops to avoid adversity and try to get away from it because they don't want to go through all that unpleasantness. Now, I don't think that's right, because you can't avoid everything out there that's adverse. Rather, we need just to whatever providence brings our way. I'm not saying go out and hunt for it, but when it comes, try to see the good behind it. There may be some good there that God's bringing on us. It's entirely possible. Again, James chapter 1, count it all joy, my brethren, when you enter into diverse or various trials and temptations. Now, of course, that would be different than physical suffering, but it's along the same along the same line of thought, if you will. But Job sees that now. I thought I heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee. Yes, sir, Wayne. There is. There's just a ton of material to think about. Yes, Buford. God has told them, the things revealed belong to us and to our children. How that verse concludes. So, whatever God's chosen to tell us, that's all we need. Because we have a relationship with Him. I think that's a good statement to make, Harold. Harold's suggesting and saying that, when Job says this, it's crystallizing in his mind God a little bit more, and he can understand Him and appreciate Him and love Him even more as his Creator. I think that's a valid point. So I absolutely believe that 42 and verse 5 is the theme of the book. I really believe that. And Job says this, of course, after. Not before, but or even not during, but after. It's all been allowed to play itself out. Beautiful words there that he utters. Turn to Ephesians 1, verse 18. I think we can make some application with this. I believe we can. It's in question 3 there on page 28. Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 18. I want you to see, if you don't see some similarity here to what Paul was saying. Rob, why don't you read for us 18 through 20, please. No, 18 through 21 of Ephesians 1.
In the eyes of your understanding and light, that you may know what is the hope of his calling, what are the riches and the glory of his inheritance in the saints, and what is the exceeding greatness of His power toward us who believe according to the working of His mighty power, which He worked in Christ when He raised Him from the dead and seated Him at His right hand in the heavenly places, far above all principality, power, might, and dominion, and every name that is named, not only in this age, but also in that which is to come.
Now look at the things that Paul says he wants saints to know based in verse 18. That you may know, here's the first one, what is the hope of His calling. I want you to know that. Secondly, I want you to know what are the riches of the glory of His inheritance in the saints. See that? And then number 3 in verse 19, that you may know what is the surpassing greatness of His power toward us who believe. Now, how were all these accomplished based on verse 20? How did God bring all this about? When He raised the Lord from the dead. But how are we going to know this? How are we going to see this? Look at the first part of verse 18. This is a prayer. Paul says, I pray that what? The eyes of your heart will be in. I want you to see this. Now, how can we see it? Well, we can't see it with the naked eye. How do we walk? By faith, not by sight. It's the eyes of our faith. The eyes of our heart have to see these things. And Job is saying something similar to that on this occasion. I can see it now because I've been allowed to take this journey. And if you're a firm believer in providence, you know that providence does not always take you where you want to go, does it? It won't take you where you want to go. But it will always take you where you need to go. It'll always take you that way. And Job had to take this journey. He had to take it. Who had confidence in him? Who was the skeptic of Job? Satan was, God, he's going to curse you to your face. Satan was the skeptic, the cynic, the doubter. But God always had confidence in his servant. There's none like him. He's my servant. And God had hope in him. God had faith in him. So Job has come to see all this. He thought he knew enough about God, but now he understands. And only because God had brought him both to and through, he brought him to this moment, but God's the one that saw him through it and got him to the end of it, where Job could see now that there's purpose behind all of God's actions. There's purpose there. And so he is much better now for having gone through this. And that's what the critical issue is, that we are made better because of it. Again, the theme, now mine eye seeth thee. Adversity will draw us closer to God if we let it. Now that's a big if. What can adversity do other than that if you let it? Make you bitter. Make you blame God. Why did God do this? Why did God take my wife, my husband? Why did God do all these things? And we've heard people say that all the time. And that's just tragic. We can become so full of anguish and bitterness that we take it out on God. But if we let it, we're the ones in control of that. If we let it, it can draw us closer to God, make us see our need more for God, make us depend on Him more. So adversity also helps prioritize life if we put things in proper perspective. What did Paul do? 2 Corinthians 12. What did he do about that situation in his life? Well, what did he first do? He prayed how many times? Three times. What did he pray? Lord, thank you for this. No, he didn't thank God for it. He said, take this away from me. Now, when he wrote the epistle, he said, to keep me from boasting. To keep me from boasting about my revelations, God gave me this thorn in the flesh. And I prayed three times that it might be removed. Paul just thought the answer is, look, this thing is hindering me. Let's get this removed so I can get on the business of being an apostle for the Lord. What was the Lord's answer? The answer was no, but what was the answer? My grace is sufficient for thee. So therefore, Paul concludes in that text, therefore, when I am weak, what? That's when I'm strong. Because I've learned to lean on the Lord more rather than my own strength. And that's what Job has learned through this. I'm going to have to lean on the Lord. I'm going to have to trust Him. I can't see this, why it's happened. I can't figure it out. As Bobby mentioned a moment ago, he got no help from his friends. They didn't help him with the answers either. Only God's got the answers. And so Job sees that now. Now mine eye seeth thee. It's just a beautiful way to bring the book to a close. It really, really is. Makes it make sense. Especially in the mind of Job. So now verse 6. After Job says all these things, he says, therefore, he says, I do two things. What's the first thing he does? Based on your translation, it may have a different word than mine, but he says, I do what? I abhor myself. Okay, mine says, I retract. Whether it means he retracts his statements, or he retracts himself away from his high-minded position. And then I do what? I repent in dust and ashes. So he's humble. All right. I mean, what do you think Job sees of himself at this moment? Not like the one that was spouting off all those things earlier in the book. No, I'm humbled. I'm broken. I really, really abase myself in the presence of Jehovah. And he tries to distance himself from those mischaracterizing statements that he had made about God. I won't take all that back. Of course, you can't take words back you've said. They're out there once you say them. It's kind of like putting toothpaste back in the tube. You can't do it. Once it's out, it's there. But we try to make amends as best we can. Yes, Tom? Yes. That's true. And we'll talk about the friends in a moment. That's right. God's gonna have something to say to the friends, isn't he, Tom? Okay. Notice what he doesn't do. Job doesn't say something like, yeah, I misspoke, but my friends, they didn't get it right either. He didn't do that. True confession isn't concerned about what others do or don't do. Is it? He's not concerned about that. Job's concerned about who? Himself. I've got to get me right. So, when we are serious about restoring our fellowship with God, which that was foremost on Job's mind, I'm going to take care of me. I'm going to take care of me. And whatever I've said, whatever I've done, I'm going to try to make amends for that, make some sort of restitution. And so I think in these words of Job, I think that's what we see him doing, trying as best he can to cover that up. Well, not to hide it, cover it up, but try to fix it as best he can. But he doesn't want to talk about the friends. Look what they said. That's admirable on Job's part. He doesn't go into that. He doesn't take that route. Now, notice here as we continue to wrap this up. Job had lost all his material possessions. He had lost his health personally. He was in such painful agony throughout the book. Job had lost, he suffered the emotional trauma of rejection by others, especially his family, namely who? His wife. That had to have hurt. Job also had to sit there and suffer through the mocking ridicule of others who misjudged him. But he never lost what? He lost all that, but he never lost his faith in God. We don't see anywhere in the book where God considered him and Job separated or cut off. I don't see it in the text. That Job did what Satan said he would do. Job never did that. So, even if you suffer all those things, like Job, you may lose your family and your health and your possessions, and you may suffer the ridicule and mocking of other people. That may happen. The answer is, don't give up on God. So, as long as you got that, you can weather those storms. What if you give up on God? You can't recover from that. That's just unrecoverable. As long as you stay that way. Now, you can repent of that and come back, but if you give up and never come back, you can't recover from that. That's just undoable. So here's the man that we're seeing here with Job. All right, now here's the epilogue or the conclusion of the book. The rebuke of the friends, verses 7 through 9. Jehovah now speaks to Eliphaz, but he speaks to him only or to him and the other two? Well, it's all of them. But he speaks to Eliphaz again, indicating he may be the oldest of the three. That's why he spoke first in the speeches, and now why God addresses him as a representative of the friends. He says, you have not spoken of me what is right. Compared to who? As my servant Job had. Now, I thought Job had misspoke about God. Had he? Had he said some things he shouldn't have said? He did. But I think we're left to conclude that what they said was worse than what Job said. We must conclude that because God addresses them in this way. He doesn't address Job that way. Yes, Charles? I think that's a distinct possibility. Charles saying that the fact that Job repented and they did not, that's why Jehovah spoke to them in this fashion. That's entirely possible. Whatever the reason is, God felt the need to specifically rebuke these three, and he did not rebuke Job on that order. Go ahead. Yes. All right. They had cast God in an unfavorable light. They said God was busy doing what with respect to Job? What was God doing to Job according to them? Punishing him because why? He's guilty of something sinful. No, they weren't. They were mischaracterizing God in that fashion. They misspoke. False accusation against God, really. That wasn't they weren't speaking for Jehovah. So the instruction is to the three friends for them to do what? In verses 8 and 9. What are they supposed to do? You go see who? Go see Job. And Job's going to act on their behalf as what? As priest. You let him offer sacrifices for you. And then, basically, I think as God says there in verse 8, I will accept him so that I may not do with you according to your folly, my version says, or your foolishness, your error. But you let Job take care of that business for you. And I want you to consider something. Turn back to chapter 22 and verse 30. This to me is very interesting. Chapter 22, verse 30. This is the last speech of Eliphaz. These are his final words to Job. In this section of the address, he's encouraging Job to repent so that his fortunes may be restored to him. Trevor, read verse 34 of chapter 22.
He will even deliver one who is not innocent. Yes, he will be delivered by the purity of your hands.
Isn't that ironic? He says, Job, if you turn your life around, then God will see to it that you're blessed again, and you'll be able to help other people. You'll deliver others by the purity of your hands. Guess what? I wonder if Eliphaz knew when he said that, that he'd be the one receiving the blessing of that. I doubt it. Isn't that ironic? Isn't that ironic? But that's what he said. And those were his last words to Job. But that's how he'll serve his friends as their priest, if you will, offering sacrifices. Okay. As the friends would go away, no doubt. I mean, let's put ourselves in their shoes just for the moment. And here we are. We have sat through all this with Job. We've had much to say. And then we go to Job and we offer these sacrifices through Job. Job intercedes on our behalf so that God doesn't deal with us as our folly would dictate. And so then all that business is through. And then as far as we can tell from the text, they just leave. They're through. Now, here we are, this group, we're the collective three friends. And so we're walking on. We're going back home. And as far as we would travel together, I mean, we're going to part ways eventually, go back to our own homes, but as far as we would walk together, what do you suppose we'd talk about? What would you talk about if we were them? Absolutely. Do you think that we'd have been confused? I would have been. I would have said something like, well, I don't get it. I don't understand what just happened. It doesn't make sense to me. How did it work out this way? Because, I mean, we could have said, now, weren't we pretty sure in our minds that Job was guilty of sin? And if that's the case, then why did it happen why did it work out just the way that it did? See? Again, that shows us of the emptiness of human wisdom. The shallowness of human wisdom when compared to what? Divine wisdom. They just don't stack up. They're just not even in the same league, the same category. So, I can't prove this, but it just seems to me, thinking about human nature, these three guys must have been so perplexed and confused going home that it worked out the way that it did. Because they were so far off base. Never were even close to correctly analyzing and diagnosing the situation. So the friends are rebuked. Then verses 10 to 17, Job's fortunes are restored. To what level in verse 10? What's it say? Twofold, twice as much. Now, does this set the precedent that if you suffer, that God will eventually restore your fortunes twofold? No, it doesn't set that precedent. That's just what happened with Job's situation. So we can't say, well, God did to Job, so he owes it to me. No, of course, we can't make that argument. But that's what he chose to do with respect to Job. You see here listed through these verses all his possessions. Brothers came, gave him gifts in verse 11. They consoled him. They comforted him. Each gave him a piece of money. You see the amount of livestock there in verse 12. Verse 13, what does he have again? He has more children. So God blesses him again with children for his family, wealth, possessions, children, friends. And then verses 16 and 17, God allows Job to live a long enough life that he sees what? He sees four generations. He sees his grandchildren. The joy of older men. There's a proverb that speaks about that, didn't there? I can't recall what it is offhand, but there's a proverb that says that grandchildren are the joy of an older man. And Job was allowed to see that. So his fortunes have been restored. And God has seen to bringing that to a close. Okay, let's make some closing comments. We have no textual evidence that Job ever learned the reason behind all his sufferings. I think I've said that more than once in this class, but we can't see anything in the book where it was all over that God said to Job, "Now, Job, sit down and I'm going to tell you the reason behind all this." That's just not there. Maybe he did tell him and it's just not revealed. But unless it's in there, we can't say that he did. So I don't think that he did. That's at least my view of it. Book of Job, I think, will help us, and Bobby alluded to this earlier, helps a student with the struggles that he may have in trying to harmonize his sufferings in life with the view of a good and a compassionate God. How are we going to harmonize a good God, a compassionate God, a loving God, with the fact that we see struggling and suffering in the world? How do you harmonize that? Can we work all those details out? I can't. That's true. Satan's in there somewhere. That's exactly right. God allows Satan to work within parameters. The book does teach us that. But studying this book helps us come to some realization and come to grips with that, if you will. Come to some kind of a conclusion. Here's some lessons that I thought, and this is kind of a summary question. Questions 9 and 10. Question 10 is the opinion question. We just kind of answered that. Do you think Job ever found out about his sufferings? I don't think that he did. But here's just some overarching lessons that I think we've covered. Satan's going to test me. He's going to try me. And he'll try you. To get us to do what? Sin, and to do what with respect to God? To curse God. He wants us to end that relationship, just like he wanted Job to do it. So that's going to come. I must not question God because I suffer. I think we can learn that. Can't do it. I can do it, but it won't profit me any. It won't serve any known purpose. It won't help my relationship with Him. Suffering does not only happen because someone's guilty of sin. That was the position of the friends. That's popular theology. It was back in that day and time, and it's still popular theology today. But it's just not so. The Bible doesn't teach that. The book of Job is excellent evidence to the contrary of that kind of teaching. And the last lesson I thought of is that faith tested will make me stronger. It'll make me stronger. I thought I heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee. Theme of the book. Help me see God in a better way. We got just a couple of minutes. I hope that you have enjoyed this study. It's been rewarding for me. I hope it's been rewarding for you. I've done most of the talking, so I'll yield the minute and a half we have left. Anybody have a closing comment that they'd like to make? Please speak up. Yes, Mike.